Folks, I am really excited to talk about our newest sponsor for the coaching staff, Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, also All-American Used Cars and Trucks. Two really, really good businesses. I'm going to start with Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust. You know, it's hard to find a good mechanic. It's hard to find somebody that you trust. And, you know, long before this situation came about, we had been taking our cars to Ruiz for a year, year and a half, and they've done great, great work. They're honest. They're upfront. They can do everything. They, you know, take care of your motor, take care of your brakes, tires, oil, so simple stuff like oil changes, brake pads, mufflers, whatever you may need. Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust are going to take care of it for you. If you are in the Omaha area and you are looking for a quality, reasonably priced, customer-friendly situation, you're not going to regret giving Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust a chance here. They are located at 4839 North 90th Street, Omaha, Nebraska, 68134. You could give Esmeralda a call up there. Her number is 402-317-2572. And they'll get you taken care of. I'm saying this as a customer. We literally do not bring our cars anywhere other than Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust for anything that we do from this point for the last year or two. So again, another business here, All American Used Cars or Trucks. If you're in the market for a used car or truck, go check out Juan Carlos's business there. 144th and I-80, 14706 Schooner Road here in Omaha. Go check it out here. If you're looking to exchange a car, buy, sell, trade, whatever it may be, you're going to get an honest deal from honest people. So go check out Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust and All American Used Cars and Trucks. Good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of a Pen and a Napkin podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to the coaching staff, episode number 101. No Dalmatians involved, Mr. Viss. But we are back.
Call me Cruella.
Yeah, no, you're not Cruella. We are back. We are here. We are sponsored by Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust and All American Used Cars and Trucks. I want to thank Juan Carlos Ruiz and Esmeralda Gonzalez for their help with everything here. We are ready to go on this fine. Well, we're recording this Thursday afternoon. You're hearing this Friday morning. Mr. Tony D. Viss, how is the late summer weather there in Cedar Rapids River Valley?
We're a little warm today. I think we're up in the 90s. I want to say we've got one or two more hot days before we drop into the 70s, but I walked out of school today and I was like, whew. Yeah. I was a little warmish. How about you? You guys got some warm temps out there?
Same. Warm here. We'll fight our way through it. You know, I love it. It could stay like this all year round and I'd be okay. That's me, you know. So but I do like October. Like if I could just have like 1 month of October and then have it go back to this, then I'd be okay, you know. So it's just everything that happens after October, between October and, you know, March. That's the stuff I don't like, you know, weather-wise. But, you know, we choose to live here, so that's what, you know, we'll work our way through it. So
enjoy all the season.
Absolutely. Episode number 101. Tony, here's what we're going to do here this week. There were numerous number ones that I found. I'm going to narrow it down to the basketball players, but some famous number ones in other sports. Ozzie Smith, Warren
Wizard,
Pee-wee Reese, Cam Newton were some really significant number ones, but I didn't realize how many great players in NBA history have worn the number one. And I've got seven of them here. Six of them, at least five are retired. Six, if he's not retired, he's at the edge of retirement.
He should be.
It is a sad career. It was a great career that was taken away by injury. I will let's say that. So I've got seven number ones, one active, one at the end of their career, and five retired number ones. What do you got?
Derrick Rose.
That's the one there. That's the semi-retired one.
You gave it away.
Yeah.
Rod Strickland.
I did not put Rodney on the list.
Yeah.
Anybody who gets caught eating a hot dog on the bench in the middle of a game, I just can't put him on this list. We have standards here at the coaching staff, Tony.
Okay. I just thought I was pretty good. Was Muggsy Bogues one?
Oh, I didn't even think about Muggsy. I didn't put him on the list, but...
He might not be.
Yeah, compared to these, I mean, these are some studs.
Tiny Archibald?
I did not put Tiny on the list, but God, he should have probably been on here. But most of these guys...
I'm making my own list right now.
Most of these guys, I would say, are better than Tiny.
All righty, let's go with Isaiah Thomas. No, he was 11. Crap, Amari Stoudemire is, I think he was 32, though.
Yeah, he was 32 and number one, but he'll always be 32 in my world, because that's when he was the best, when he was with the Suns.
Yeah, yep. When he had Steve Nash. Yeah. Man.
You ready?
Yeah.
All right. The legend, the big O, Oscar Robertson.
I would have thought he was zero.
No, he not the big O on his uniforms. He was number one. Tracy McGrady.
Yeah.
Penny Hardaway.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Bosh.
Really?
Chauncey Billups.
I thought of Chauncey, but then I was like, I thought he was three or four for a second.
And then the current player is Olympic gold medal winner Devin Booker.
Yeah. So D-book. D-book. Okay. Not my best.
Yeah, it's all right, buddy. It's all right. You'll bounce back. You know what?
We'll see.
You know why? Because you've got a winning mindset, which just happens to be our topic for this week. How's that for a roll in there,
Tony? Man, yeah. That was good. Yeah. You're like a professional at this.
I don't know. 560 some of these later, I should probably have something figured out. So, so yeah, winning mindset here. Tony, you know, you're the one that picked this one out, so I'll let you lead off here. You know, why'd you pick it? What do you like about it? Well, what direction you want to go here?
Yeah, this was a Twitter post from Greg Burge again. I think he might be my favorite. And, you know, just looking at it, and it was one of those days, I don't know if I was waxing philosophical or whatever, but just a lot of these kind of talked about, you know, the two that jumped out the most at me was the process is the prize. Like a lot of times we get wrapped up in the wins because that's, you know, the end game or whatever. But at the same time, preparing to win and doing the things that it takes to improve, you know, just if you kind of fall in love with that, then the other stuff takes care of itself. And so that was one of those things that really kind of stood out to me. And the other one, kind of maybe more from a classroom standpoint, failure is growth. And I think too many times, you know, we get, like I said earlier, kind of get wrapped up in wins or grades or whatever the case may be. And, you know, sometimes that those setbacks that happen, because I think for me anyway, and maybe I'm weird and it's only just me, I've learned way more from failure than I ever did from success. Mm-hmm. And so I think that failure has helped to spur my growth, both, you know, as a person and as a coach.
Yeah. I also, and I think you brought out a bunch of really good stuff there, Tony. One of the things that popped into mind while you're talking about how failure is a, you know, can be turned, when used the right way, can be a very, very positive experience. But I also thought about, you know, preparing and having a winning mindset and putting yourself in the best position that you can be. And one of my favorite wooden's, and I use it in the classroom all the time, failure to prepare is preparing to fail. And I think we're both kind of barking up the same tree here, if I'm reading in between the tea leaves enough or well enough. You know, a lot of this, a winning mindset, one of the big things that you can control is your preparation. And I can, you know, like it, people could say a lot of things about me, what I was good at, what I wasn't good at when I was coaching, and so be it. That's their opinions. I will defend to the end of time that it would be hard to find a coach that was more prepared than I was going into every practice and every competition. Now, does that mean I always made the right decisions in those situations? No, of course not. Nobody really can. But, you know, that's something I really felt like this is so controllable. This is one of my main jobs. Part of developing a winning mindset with whichever program that I'm associated with, doggone it, we're going to be really, really, really well prepared, and we're going to cross all the T's and dot as many lowercase J's as we possibly can. Wayne's World 2 reference. You know, that was something that was so very important to me, and I'll dive into it a little bit more if you want to, Tony, but I'll toss it back to you.
Yeah, that's just, you know, kind of the same boat with that. I wanted to make sure that, you know, I wasn't arrogant enough to think that I helped us to win games, but I was, I hope, humble enough to make sure that I didn't cost us games.
Yeah.
And one of the things I wanted to make sure that I did, besides stay out of the way and let them play, is the fact that I wanted them to be prepared. I wanted them to know, you know, who their starters were, who the key players off the bench were, what they ran defensively, where we could kind of exploit some things offensively, you know, what were their continuity offense, their set plays, their out of bounds plays. And I wanted to make sure that as we went in there, that we knew those things. And then, you know, as you get into the late game situation, who are the players, if we're down, that we need to foul, you know, and just making sure that we were prepared. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and like we've talked about with scouting reports, and that's a whole nother thing with pause. I mean, that's something I took a lot of pride in. I made sure, you know, we've talked about practice planning. You know, my practices are planned out every minute. It's down to a T. And, you know, and I take a lot of pride in that. I make sure, at least I hope I do anyway, that what we are working on is stuff that prepares us in games and helps us to be, you know, successful and put them in the best possible situation as a coach that I can. And so, yeah, that was one of the things as well, the fact that, you know, you want to be prepared. And I think part of that at times as a younger coach, maybe not knowing what I didn't know, and you learn those lessons and you don't want to experience again. So you make sure that you put that best foot forward. And so, yeah, those are things just in terms of like the mindset is so very, very important. And one of the things that's really helped me, you know, and you probably have taken a look at the growth mindset as well, Marty,
yeah,
is just the fact that when you say, I can't do this yet, and the power of yet, and, you know, just kind of changing that. And, you know, I remember hearing a story one time about the old Soviet Union and how they would, you know, take and closely watch these refrigerated rail cars. And one of the soldiers that was watching it accidentally got locked inside of it. And then when they got to the station and they opened it up, he was there frozen to death. But the one thing that was out there was the rail car was broken. It wasn't. But in his mind, he was, and his body went through and started to shut down like he was. And that's the power of the mind. And I just think that whole mindset and preparation and what you think of things is so very, very important.
I want to clarify something with you. The Soviet Union no longer exists?
No, not anymore.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Just a couple years ago.
Okay, just making sure. No, I think, you know, you put in the work. That's an immediate key part of a winning mindset is preparation. And I think, and I hope this makes sense, Tony, part of your job is as a head coach, and I'll talk about, you know, kind of success with this and then failure with it and learning from those failures. You know, part of your job and your preparation is without saying it to your team or learning how to artfully communicate it without it being a big deal is, in your preparation, have you covered all the bases to do everything you can as the coach to prevent your team from losing the game? I think that is part of a winning mindset, if that makes any sense at all, Tony. You know, and you've communicated that, but you know, here is younger Marty Plum versus older Marty Plum. And again, learning from failure. We play whoever on Thursday night. So on Monday, we start talking about, you know, Mary, the best 3-point shooter on West High's team. We're not going to let her get an open look. Do not let her get an open look. Do not. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And then inevitably what happens within the first 45 seconds of the game, Tony?
It's a wide open look.
It's a wide open look. And then what do you think younger Marty Plum did? We just worked on this for 3 and you're lying. And then that kind of spirals into more of a negative mindset, because now the kids are sitting there like, coach is mad because, yeah, I know we worked on this for 3 days. I know I made a mistake, you know, that type of thing. And that was one of the particular things that drove me crazy, is especially in girls basketball. You give a great shooter an open look. That just drove me nuts. But you learn from that as the years go on, that you've got to communicate that and you've got to prepare. Part of a winning mindset is knowing some things are going to go wrong as well, Tony, don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, that's a big part of it. And to be honest with you, as a coach, part of it is you're a motivational speaker. Now, you might not be in the category of a Matt Foley, but at the same time, you have to keep them going. And, you know, like what you were talking about, Marty, there were times that, you know, we put a lot of time in on stuff and we blow an assignment or we wouldn't execute or whatever, and you blow up and you get mad, and now all of a sudden you've started the spiral, the downward spiral, and that can't be a part of it as far as things go. Yes, they're going to make mistakes, but you have to be there to speak, you know, greatness into them, to help them stay determined and keep going forward, you know. And so those are so very, very key as a coach, just to have that part. Because here's the thing, if you think you can, you might be right. Mm-hmm. If you think you can't, you are definitely right.
Yeah. In 1993, Counting Crows referred to Omaha as somewhere in Middle America. More people know Omaha as the home of Warren Buffett, the Union Pacific Railroad, and the College World Series. Athletically, Nebraska is known for its dominance in college and high school football and volleyball, while basketball has perennially been on the back burner. But for one season, in its largest city, basketball was king of the state. In a time of social and political turmoil in our country, three high school boys basketball teams from Omaha, Nebraska were ranked in the top 25 in the country, featuring some of the best talent that one city has ever produced anywhere in the country. Amongst these three teams were 9 Division I basketball players, and all 15 starters from these three teams played collegiate athletics at various levels for at least 2 seasons. Kings of their court, 3 teams, 1 city, and the greatest basketball season in Nebraska high school history begins with the chaotic ending of the 2020 state tournament, as the whole world was shutting down due to the COVID-19 virus. Over the span of the next year, these players, coaches, and parents navigated their basketball futures while also, like the rest of the United States and the world, worked through COVID quarantines, the George Floyd murders and riots, the political turmoil of the 2020 presidential campaign, and much more. 1 year later, the destinies of these three teams would intertwine themselves for the final time at the 2021 Nebraska State Basketball Tournament, where the crescendo to this story occurred 365 days after it began, with some of the best high school basketball any state has ever seen. Kings of their court, 3 teams, 1 city, and the greatest basketball season in Nebraska high school history is the story of highly driven individuals searching to achieve lifelong dreams and aspirations, both on and off the basketball floor, during a season that almost didn't happen. Kings of Their Court will be published on October the 1st, Tuesday, October the 1st. Kindle copies are $9.99. Paperback copies are $19.99. Copies are eligible to be pre-ordered today, so be sure to get on Amazon.com and pre-order your copy of Kings of Their Court.
I think one of the things that I did a much better job, again, as I got older, and it's really simple. A lot of people do it. I'm not saying I'm reinventing the wheel with this, but boy, really developing a next play attitude is a huge part of a winning mindset. And a lot of people associate next play with when you make a mistake, and that's very, very true. But you got to move on from a great play. You got to move on from a yes. positive play as well. And then you celebrate it when you got triple zeros up on the clock and the fourth quarter is over with. That's when you could kind of sit back and take a deep breath and relax. Otherwise, for the next 32 minutes or the next 40 minutes or the next 48 minutes, depending on whatever level you're at, you've got to have a next play mindset the entire time. I'll never forget when Michael was working for Nebraska and they were kind of struggling and they were playing Ohio State. And they were on the verge of beating Ohio State. And one of the guys goes in and he dunks it with like 35 seconds left. All of a sudden, Nebraska's up 5. Crowd's going nuts in Pinnacle Bank. We're going nuts. Hey, well, he dunks it and he does the whole flex thing for 3 or 4 seconds or whatever. And he's putzing around. They don't get back on defense. And sure enough, Ohio State stays calm. They get the ball out of the net. They kick it out. Boom, boom, boom. Kick it up. Hit a 3. Now they're just down 2. They call timeout. And they ended up pushing the game into overtime and then winning the game. You know, and I was just like, that is next play right now. Yeah, you could do all that flexing and stuff when it's triple zeros, but don't do it then. And I think developing that next play mentality within your program, positive plays, negative plays, it's gotta be there. It's gotta be there, Tony.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the times that a team is most vulnerable on the basketball court is after a spectacular play, like you said, a slam dunk, a reverse layup where they, you know, put a lot of English on the ball and it goes in, because they want to kind of strut around, if you will. And if you can get the ball out of the net and make 2 quick passes up the court, you can find them in a very compromising position. So I 100% agree that, you know, move on from a bad play, go to the next play, but it's almost as important, if maybe not even a little bit more, that you move on from a great play as well, because if you keep celebrating it, the other team is going to get you on the other end and score on you. So moving on to that next possession is so very important. I a lot of times I think that's just living in the present.
Yeah.
You know, be where your feet are. Yeah. And I think that's a big part of it is, you know, good play, bad play, move on and go to the next play.
Yeah. Yeah. We, especially when I was at Fort Calhoun, something I wish I would have done a better job when I was at Scott, but I know at Fort Calhoun, man, we beat that into their head. Good play, next play. Bad play, next play. So, what else you got, buddy?
You know, the other thing too is the fact that, you know, as far as a mindset goes, you know, we talk at times about confidence, and there's always kind of like this false confidence, false bravado. I think confidence is one of those things where you've put in the work. When you put in the work and you've earned it, then you can have that confidence. And I think that's another mindset that we have to get to, is the fact that, you know, hard work is required and it's fun. And it's one of those things when you put in the work, preparation, you put in the reps, you put in those things, then that confidence is there. You know, if you haven't put in the time, you know it. And when it comes time to go against that opponent or go against that good team, if you haven't put in the work, then that confidence is fake.
I especially last year, that was one of my key talking points. You know, I was really proud of our kids and the work that they had put in the off season. And, you know, just, hey, believe in the work that you've put in, believe in the time that you've put in. It's just like, we're a lot better at this podcast episode number 101 than we were on episode number 3. We would probably both cringe if we went back and listened to episode 2 or 3 or 4 or whatever. But, you know, now we feel a lot more confident. And so I agree with you there that's, you know, just work is a 4-letter word, but it's a good 4-letter word. There's other words that are 4-letter words that are bad 4-letter words. But work is a good one, and you know what Parcells say: confidence comes from demonstrated ability, and that demonstrated ability more often than not is you've got to put in the time, you've got to put in the work, you've got to get things taken care of there. We had talked a little scouting before, Tony, and we were talking about, you know, your job as coach is to cover your bases with, you know, here's, you know, what can we do to prevent us from losing? But also, I think with a winning mindset with your players, I think every time you go into something, and you and I have both been there where we've rebuilt programs, and you know, we were looking up and we probably didn't see much of a light at the end of the tunnel at a certain point. But one of the things that I know I started, I'm sure you did too, you've got to give your team a path to victory every time out. You know, when you come out here, it's not just about, hey, we can't let, you know, Mary get a bunch of threes. We've got to handle Kennedy's pressure. We got to do this. You know, you rephrase it in that, girls, when you beat Kennedy's pressure, you're going to get layups. And that's how we're going to win tonight. We're going to attack their pressure. Now, here's what we need to do to attack their pressure. Here's our press break. Here's the key points where they're weak at. When we attack that, that's what's going to lead us to victory here tonight. And phrasing that in such a way, that is the winning mindset. That gives you, okay, when we do this, and using the word win instead of if, it's not, hey, girls, if you do this, you're going to get layups. It's no, when we do this, you're going to get layups. And having that mindset and knowing, okay, hey, when we take care of the ball, when we attack their pressure, we're going to get layups. And if Kennedy can't turn you over, they can't beat you. That is the path of victory. And I think that's a key communication point that you have with your teams as you try to develop that confidence and a winning mindset.
Yeah, it's almost like you're speaking it into being.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, it's not if, it's when. You know, hey, right now, I need us to sprint back on defense. If we can sprint back on defense and build a wall, so to speak, and make them take contested outside jump shots, we're going to get stop after stop. You know, and one of the big things they talk about are the kills, three stops in a row. Mm-hmm. Let's set a goal here of getting a kill here. You know, and I think that's one of the things that's so very important. When we get kills, we are going to make them pay, because we can rebound and run, and we will score on them in transition. And just continuing to, you know, put that path, paint that path, if you will, that can help lead them to victory.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What else you got, buddy?
You know, another one I think is very important is that skin in the game, so to speak. And what I mean by that is they have to invest. You have to commit and go all in. You know, you can't dip a toe in the water. You can't stick a foot in the water. I need you to jump in this with me and commit to it. Because here's the thing. Is it going to hurt if we aren't successful? Yes, but here's the deal. Anything that's worth doing is worth going all in on. Mm-hmm. And completely investing in it. And I think that's the other thing that you have to do, is to get them to buy in, you know, and you have to be not necessarily a used car salesman, but you have to be somebody who can get people to see that vision and get them to commit to that vision and develop that mindset of going all in. And once you do that, I think you got something special that you can build on.
Yeah, you're painting that vision for not just for your players, but it's your assistant coaches, it's your junior high coaches, it's your parents, it's your administration. Your job as CEO of the program is to paint a vision of where we're going to be. Now, I think that comes with some preparation as well, Tony. You know, one of the things that I worked on when I was out before I took the Fort Calhoun job is, hey, how are we going to get to where we want to go? And I literally wrote out a bullet point. 4-year plan of where we wanted to be, you know, and you know, we're going to do this and this and this and this. The first year, here's the things we want to establish. Second year, and you know, it was tweaked along the way. I mean, this, you know, I kind of had the blanket, the generic view, and then I tweaked it for the situation that I had there. And if I ever coach again, I would take that very same thing and I would tweak it for the next one as well, you know. So, but You can imagine the vision, you can see it, but you've also got to have a roadmap. You just can't make it up as you go along, don't you think?
Yeah, it's one of those things. If you know, if you don't have a goal and know where you're going, you're going to get lost. You have to have a very laid out roadmap as you go. And then just kind of check those points off on your path to where you want to get to. And you're going to get the buy-in from the kids if you can make that clear to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another one I had, buddy, was positive self-talk for you as a coach, for the players. You know, basketball is a game of mistakes. Bobby Knight said, you know, victory favors the team that makes the least amount of mistakes. And, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of truth to that. And so when those mistakes inevitably happen, you've got to talk your way through it. You've got to be able to refocus as quickly as you can. The average human brain takes 5 to 7 seconds to refocus after they make a mistake. Well, how long does it take when, you know, Mary makes a mistake and Coach Plum is over there screaming at her, "Why did you double dribble there?" You know, that type of thing. And guilty as charged. I mean, I'm guilty as charged. I don't know how many different times with stuff like that, Tony. Again, got better at it as I went along. But, you know, hey, you know, Mary double dribbled. Hey, next play. You know, move on to it like that. Hey, you know, Marty, like you're on the sideline. Marty, calm down right now. You can't get that upset at the official. Deep breath. And I think those that winning mindset and being having the ability to refocus yourself through talking to yourself. And one of the things I read and learned was that when you use your name, when you're talking to yourself, it the brain works faster. So, you don't sit there and go, calm down, Tony. Or you don't sit there and go, calm down. You say, calm down, Tony. Tony, relax. You know, that type of thing. And it re-centers you. And I forget what the exact percentage was, but I'm going to say twice as fast at least in that regard. And so talking to yourself and using your own name and your positive self-talk. Tony, keep shooting it well. Keep shooting it well, Tony. The ball's coming off your hand great tonight, Tony. Keep shooting it well. You know, that helps. And whether it's your coaching or your playing or those type of things. So that's another one to create a winning mindset there is treating yourself with confidence because it's so easy to beat yourself down.
You know, I think it's John Gordon that says that optimism is an advantage, mm-hmm. a competitive advantage. And I would agree with that. And the positive self-talk is so very, very important. You know, when you go into something, just having the belief that you can do it is so important. You know what? There are very few, I think, that you know, with the negative self-talk can go. I know some people use it as motivation, but the vast majority of people, it's just kind of like a millstone around their neck and it pulls them down.
Yeah.
And the positive self-talk is so, so very important. And encouraging them to move on to the next play. Hey, that looked good. Next one's in. You know, and that's one of the things too with your shooters. As you develop that confidence in them, you know, if you're a 50% shooter and you just missed that one, what should that tell you? The next one's in. Well, if they missed two, the next two are in. And yep. Just kind of go into that positive. And optimism is such a big thing.
Mm-hmm. I've got two more big ones here, Tony. How many you got left?
I am out. Those were my handful.
Okay. All right. Two of them is body language, the mindset. We're going to come in and we're going to have our shoulders back and where our chests are going to be out and we're going to feel good about ourselves. We're going to make eye contact with one another when we talk to each other. Different measurements in that regard. And one thing I got better at, you know, I had a player, a long time ago whose body language struggled, but she was our best player or second best player. And one of the mistakes I made as a younger coach was when her body language slipped, I did not call her on that the way that I should have. Lesson learned along the way. I was highly cognizant the rest of my career of body language. And a lot of times with your kids, it's just, hey, you know, Becky, you need to watch your body language, you know, shoulders up, breathe. Feel good about yourself, whatever that may be. Other kids, you know, you gotta be a little bit firmer with them. Sometimes you get to a point where you gotta have a conversation with them. You need to, you know, talk to them. And again, it's easy to complain about it, but what solutions do you have for them? How can we solve this when you get frustrated? And usually it just comes from competitive frustration. But if you get that competitively frustrated, you're taken out of the game. And so it's the same thing for you as a coach. You can't get that upset with officials. You got to try and work your way through it. I know without a doubt, Tony, the worst game that I coached last year, I feel like in my head was our district championship game. Which game did I get most upset with officials and which game did I ride the officials the most? That game.
That one.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, And it wasn't even the entire crew. It was one guy. And every 50-50 call, it felt like it was going their way. Now, I never watched the film for a lot of different reasons, so I don't know if they were good calls or bad calls. But boy, in the heat of the moment, it sure felt that way. But it was the worst. It was the game I without a doubt coached the worst all season long. And I firmly believe, looking back on it, that is a direct correlation of that.
Yeah, it is. I'm trying to remember who said, you know, with body language, it doesn't whisper, it screams.
Yeah.
And, you know, when your body language goes, you are giving an outside clue, you know, a visible clue to your opponent that you're compromised. And they're going to take advantage of that at that time as you lose your poise and composure. You know, and I think as a coach, I feel the same way, that when I would get wrapped up about calls or get, you know, this, that, or the other, and would lose that, then all of a sudden, you know, I'm not making the right play calls, putting them in the right position. My substitutions aren't as solid as what they have been. You know, I haven't adjusted defensively if they're finding success against whatever. And it's because I'm too emotional. And I go back, I take a look at guys like Brad Stevens. It's those guys that stay level. I think that's super, super important and key.
Yeah, and that's whose name I had written down for head coach. You know, I wish, so wish I was more like Brad Stevens. I worked like crazy to be like Brad Stevens. I got a lot better, but I still never reached that level. So kind of along that same thing, Tony, I love watching NBA games, and it doesn't happen nearly as much in the college game, but the NBA games, they go inside the huddle. Positive huddles are essential to growth mindset, to a winning mindset. This is my last one here. And I just think that when you are positive in that huddle, hey, we've got to find a way to do this. You know, you're doing a great here. Let's get this cleaned up right here. And just that message. And again, when I was younger, it was all fire and brimstone. And when we weren't playing well, it was, hey, come on, let's go. Let's get, you know, I really budgeted those outbursts to one or two a year inside a huddle. Everything else I tried to keep really, really positive. Even if we were struggling, you know, hey, we're not playing great right now. We know it, but we're only down 8. Let's just string together 4 good minutes and let's see what happens here, you know, and things like that. But I really learned a lot from that. And it seems like common sense, but again, especially when you're a younger coach, you get a little worked up, you get a little excited, you get overly competitive, and you don't check those things in the way that you should. And I think that's really important. If you're going to build a winning mindset within your program, I think positive huddles are a big part of it.
You know, and I think it was Monty Williams back when he was with the Suns. He talked about, I'm not calling you out, I'm calling you up. And I think that's an interesting way to look at it, you know, as far as things go, you know, just being positive with them in the huddles, you know, encouraging them to keep going, you know. And I think that's a big part of it, is just the perseverance side of things in sport and showing determination. And in a huddle, if you can, you know, they leave their energized by it, it's so much better than obviously if they walk out of there with their heads down. And here's the thing, if you are a fire and brimstone guy and you go to it all the time, here's what they start to hear from you. Wah, 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 wah. Yeah. Because that's all you do. And so that's where they begin to tune you out. And it's kind of like Charlie Brown's teacher.
Mm-hmm. Coaches, if you are in the Omaha, Council Bluffs, Lincoln metropolitan areas and surrounding areas, it is that time of year again. It is time for the 2024 MBCA Fall Coaches Clinic Series. We're going to start this on Wednesday, September 18th. We're going to go 4 weeks in a row, September 18th, 25th, October the 2nd, and October the 9th. And we have got a great lineup of coaches. Drew Johnson, women's basketball coach at Nebraska Kearney. Marty Levinson, new men's basketball coach at Nebraska Kearney. Tim Sandquist, head men's basketball coach at Kirkwood Community College. Carrie Amy, the new women's basketball coach at the University of South Dakota. Mark Swoboda, from my alma mater, Briarcliff University, go Chargers. Head men's basketball coach there. Coach Sabota is going to be down. Amy Williams, head women's basketball coach at the University of Nebraska, is going to be one of our guests. We've got a couple more slots to fill. So it is going to be a great series of clinics. It's going to be located at Legends Sports Bar here in Omaha, 72nd and Pacific Street, just east of 72nd Street there. And for those four clinics, $80 is going to cover your clinic fees, the beverages, the food, and the camaraderie, the networking, all of those different things you're going to have at the Metro Basketball Coaches Association Coaches Clinics here this fall series. It's going to be a great run of coaches, so I encourage you, get signed up today. If you want to get signed up, if you want more information, you can send an email to Tom Crable at mbcaomaha@gmail.com. And Tom will get back to you. He'll get you all the information that you need. So coaches, get signed up for this fall's run of coaches clinics for the Metro Basketball Coaches Association. Well, you know, Tony, who always brings positivity, who always brings energy, who always has a winning mindset.
If you've ever been to one of their shows, you know it's Europe.
Actually, that's false. It's this.
First off, I am 35 years old.
Matt Foley.
And I live in a van down by the river.
My guy.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out a way how to work that in, and you just walked right into it, my friend. You walked right into it. I love it. 101 episodes here. We switched it up. We went from our usual one to a little Matt Foley motivational speaker. Mr. Viss, it is your time, or it is your week for trivia. What do you have for me, my friend?
The WNBA playoffs are closing in.
Yes. Today's
one
last day of the regular season.
Will not be participating in the playoffs because they have the worst record in the league is the Los Angeles Sparks. Mm-hmm. When was the last time the Sparks made the WNBA playoffs?
I think they won the title, I want to say in 2018, and is that maybe their last appearance? I'm going to go 2018, Tony.
Incorrect.
Too early, too late.
You are, I want to say, too early.
2019.
Incorrect.
Am I going in the right direction?
You are close.
2020.
Is correct.
Yeah, all
this
right.
This is their fourth straight year of not making the playoffs. They hired Kurt Miller, obviously, a couple seasons ago. And Kurt, I feel like, has some good young talent, has unfortunately lost the Ngumu K sister that went to Seattle.
Yep.
But
lost Cameron Brink to an ACL this year.
Cameron Brink to an injury. But yeah, they'll have the first pick who have a chance, I'm sorry, because they do the lottery to have the first pick. And if all of a sudden they get very fortunate, get the number one pick, and Paige Beckers is in the LA Sparks fold, I will go out on a limb and predict that they will snap that streak next year.
Oh, wow. Look at Mr. Viss. This season isn't even over, and he's making predictions for next year. He's a bad man out of the Cedar River Valley, Mr. Tony B. Viss. So bad that when he goes out to eat, he says,
Always, we have the meat.
And this week, Tony, we have a new person paying for our Arby's. Do you have any idea as to who that might be? Only one big contract signed. And it's not even a big contract. I mean, big contract for a teacher, but...
Was it Woj's last... Woj bomb with, is it Okoro or whatever that was with the Cavs?
There you go. Isaac Okoro is buying Tony and I Arby's this week. 3 for $38 million. So that's almost $13 million a year over the next 3 years. Averaged a career high 9.5 points a game last year. So congratulations, Isaac Okoro, for buying Tony and I Arby's for the next time we go out together. In fact, Tony and I would look to Isaac and say,
How about that?
So, Tony, let's it's been we had a list of our TWIB section here, and then over the last 24 hours, it's kind of gotten shaken up a little bit.
Has a little bit. We have had some retirements and different things going on. So yeah, we had a little shuffling.
So let's talk a little woes here. That was out of nowhere.
It was, and I'm guessing he gets pretty handsomely compensated for what he did at ESPN. But I think at the same time, I was reading about, you know, some guys that do that in other sports, and they're just like, you know, he probably got tired of staying up and getting these things. And then when you take a shower, putting your phone close to the shower just in case something happens. And then you're at holiday stuff and you can't do that because you're all the time having to stay up on these things and wanted to live a regular life. He's a St. Bonnie grad, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
And he's going to go be their GM. And so obviously not going to get compensated as well, but maybe have a little bit more fulfillment and get to live out other parts of his life. And here's the thing, Marty, and I don't say this to be funny. He's a lot younger than I thought he was.
Yeah. 55 or 56?
Yeah, he's 55.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, those guys that work the beat like that, like a Woj or a Craig Mortensen that used to do it for the NFL or
Adam Schefter, yeah. Jeff Passan. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of akin to working the West Wing. You know, why do people only work in the West Wing for 3 years? Well, working in the West Wing for 3 years is like working a regular job for 9 years, with the pace, with the intensity of it. And I'm imagining, again, national security isn't, you know, it's not up in the air when we're talking about Isaac Okoro's contract or anything like that. But yeah, just the inability to just put down your phone and just go away. You know, it's impossible because if he misses a scoop, he looks bad, you know? And so I think that, you know, it does make sense definitely in that regard. I'll be interested to see how he does. You know, his, you know, obviously we know him for reporting on the NBA. So what will he be doing in the college game? And this position is getting more and more popular, general manager, because there is so much player movement, especially at that Division I level with the portal every year, that it does make sense that you have somebody that's tracking players all over the country and having scouting reports ready. And you know, is this guy or gal a good fit for us? I think it does make sense. What do you think, Tony?
And then you got the whole NIL thing on top of it.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think that kind of falls under that umbrella as well. But it makes a lot of sense. I know you're seeing it maybe more so on the football side of things. And I think there's been some success there initially. And so I think you're only going to see it grow as far as GMs for that. But it's interesting because obviously when you take a look at the professional level, GMs fire coaches. That's not what they're going to do at the collegiate level.
Yeah.
You still have an AD that you've got an answer to.
Yeah. I know Michael's friend at Nebraska, Peyton Borders. He's the recruiting coordinator for the University of Nebraska. He's a young guy, 26, 27 years old, you know, shout out Peyton, you know, and those positions are going to be added on to staffs because a lot of times it's not about the X's and O's. It's about the Jills and the Joes. And you've got to have players and you got to have players that fit your system. And what becomes even harder in this portal era, in this NIL era, is vetting the personalities of the players. How do they fit? You know, will Billy or Mary fit with us? And so I do think it is a logical extension of what we're seeing develop here. And I think it's going to still be another, I forget which coach I was talking to on the pod, but they said it's probably going to be another 3 or 4 years before the dust completely settles and we kind of figure this whole system out.
I would agree. You know, when you take a look at collegiate football, I know I mentioned that it you know, that position is more prominent there, but Clemson, kind of their drop has been they don't really do the portal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a big part of why they're getting passed up by these other programs. And so it'll be interesting to see if Dabo and Clemson embraces that. And then the other thing I thought was really cool that Woj did, he mentioned that he started off covering high school sports. And he talked about how, you know, as the guy that was the big NBA, you know, Woj bombs and stuff like that, that what he did there was easier than when he covered high school sports. And he gave a shout out to them. And, you know, I've had some really good fortune of having some really good high school journalists, you know, whether it's Jeff Lender here in Cedar Rapids at the Gazette, Mike Effner when I was out in Harlan, and I'm probably forgetting some, but, you know, kudos to those guys. They've done a fantastic job. And then Marty, as we get ready to wrap up Woj here, here's my question. Who do you think ESPN replaces him with? Will they go and get his protege Shams? Or will they get Chris Haynes?
I think it's going to be Chad Angel.
That's who I would hire.
Yeah.
But I don't know if ESPN has the budget.
Yeah. It's been a while since we've had a Chad Angel reference. So
it is true.
Yeah. So let's talk a little WNBA. Asia Wilson, Tony, first player ever to get 1,000 points. You know, they're playing in the expanded schedule. Used to be 36 games. Now they're up to 40. What a season. MVP, lock, stock, and barrel. She is playing at such a high level right now, Tony. It's really impressive to watch her.
It is. And I mean, the gap between her and whoever ends up second, I don't know who that will be, to be honest with you. It's a gulf in between that. I mean, over 1,000 points. And then the other night I saw that, you know, obviously Angel Reese hasn't played the last handful of games, but she ended up breaking the rebounding record that Angel Reese held for a while. Uh-huh. Now she has the most rebounds on top of me. It truly is an incredible season. But she is the standard in the WNBA. I had a conversation the other day. I was talking to another basketball nut like we are. And I said, hey, let's say you had the first pick in an expansion WNBA draft. Every player is eligible. Who would you take? And obviously I live in Iowa, so their response was Caitlin Clark. They looked at me and said, who would you take? And I said, I would think of Caitlin Clark, but I'm going to be honest, I probably take Asia Wilson. Mm-hmm. I think she is head and shoulders the best player in the world right now.
Yeah. I mean, she's only 6 or 7 years into her career. I mean, she was drafted in 2018. So yeah, she's only about 6 years into her career. She's got another, and it's not like, you know, a little bit. I mean, she's a tremendous athlete, but she's not, you know how like Giannis is so dependent on his athleticism in the men's game. She's a little bit more Jokic, where it's like, yeah, you know, she's got some run to her, but she's not overly dominant in that regard. She just plays the game magnificently, and she's a whole lot of fun to watch, Tony. Whole lot of fun to watch. Yeah, she's 28 years old.
Great leader. And competes on both ends of the floor. Like, it's not that she's the best scorer in the WNBA and you got to kind of hide her on the other end. She's a legit, really good defensive player and probably the best leader in the WNBA. You listen to her teammates talk about her just having a special season and going to end up with another MVP on her mantle.
Yep. Portland, the newest WNBA franchise. It's San Francisco. So there's 12 franchises, and then we've got San Francisco, and it's Toronto is the other one, right, Tony?
I believe so. Don't quote me on that, but I believe so. And I think Portland's going to make them 15th.
Portland will be 15th. Good news for the league. The talent level is crazy good, and there's more coming. You know, there's six legitimate, really, really good teams right now in the league. And you couldn't honestly, there was a time where you couldn't honestly say that. You might have two or three really dominant teams and everybody else was kind of, you know, but between New York, Minnesota, Connecticut, Las Vegas, Seattle, and Indiana. And I'm going to put Indiana in there because, you know, after starting 1-8, they're 19-11, history teacher math. You know, they're a good basketball team. No.
The only team they haven't beat, I think, is Las Vegas.
Really?
Yeah.
So they're a good basketball team, and like I said, there's been years where you could say, oh, there's, you know, two, maybe let's hurry up and get to Team X versus Team Y in the finals here. And not this year. Three of our four first round series, I believe, are gonna be really, really highly competitive.
You know, and they're still trying to figure out the whole seeding thing. It's not quite done. But one of the matchups that could happen based upon tonight would be in the semifinals, New York and Las Vegas. And, you know, Las Vegas was kind of written off not that long ago, and they're on a big win streak. I think they just snapped Seattle's 4 or 5 game win streak the other day after the, and then they had went into Indiana and beat them back to back at Indiana. Las Vegas, I don't know if I would want to see them on the other side right now. They're looking like they're rounding into form. But yeah, there's some really good teams. If you made me pick right now who I think is going to win it, I would not take New York. I think I would take Minnesota, who just beat Connecticut on the last second three-pointer.
Bridget Carlton.
By Bridget Carlton.
Yeah,
former Cyclone.
Yeah. Carter Plum, huge New York Liberty fan, does not want to see Las Vegas in the semifinals. When I say huge fan, like my 22-year-old college son watches almost every Liberty game start to finish. That's how big of a fan he is. Yeah. I mean, he's really dedicated to it. So, and he knows what he's talking about. He absolutely knows what he's talking about. So, should be a lot of fun. We'll cover the playoffs next week. A Pen and a Napkin University videos are just another way that a pen and a napkin can help you become a better coach. Our university video library is constantly expanding, with topics ranging from interviewing for a job to full court defense to 25 universal truths about coaching. Our university videos will help you round out your skill set as a coach and help you hone your craft. Videos are $10 a piece, with bundling options available. To order, you can DM me on Twitter, send me an email at apenandanapkin@gmail.com, or order from our website, apenandanapkin.com. Be sure to check out the A Pen and a Napkin video library. Coaches are absolutely loving our Taking Over a New Program booklet. As many of you know, I spent 2 years outside of coaching, and during that time, I hung a note card in my workspace at school that said, "Strip the house down to the studs." I took that time to really rethink and reorganize my thoughts on what it takes to run a transformational program. As I prepared for the possibility of coaching again, I organized these thoughts into this 96-page booklet. How much do I trust this booklet? I used this booklet as I went on interviews to help sell myself and my vision for what my new program would look like. If I'm using it to sell myself, why wouldn't I recommend it to you, my listeners? This booklet will help you look at any part of your program, no matter what stage you're at in your program, and help improve it in some way. It's all yours for only $15, which includes shipping and handling. For more information, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. But for now,
sounds like a plan.
Yeah, it does sound like a good plan. We are going to cover the NBA Central Division. Last week, we began our previews, we went with the Atlantic. We were almost chalk here last week. This might be a little bit more interesting, especially when we get to the top three, I would think. I'm guessing 5 and 4. We're going to be pretty close in line here, Tony. I'll go first this week because I think you went first last week. I'm going to put the Detroit Pistons in the cellar in the Central Division. You know, it's Cade Cunningham, and you know, what direction are we going? I think they've had some bad luck when it comes to the lottery. You know, they had the best odds to get Wembanyama. They didn't get Wembanyama. You know, which is, yeah, again, that's why the lottery is in place, to prevent the tanking. But you know, some of these pieces, you know, you just wonder how they fit together. I understand bringing in Tobias Harris on, you know, basically I think it's a 1-year deal with a team option. You know, so a veteran guy, you got to give the money to somebody. Hopefully he can show some of the younger players how to be a professional. Cade Cunningham needs to stay healthy. Is he a star? Is he a guy that's going to be up for All-Star games? Is he a guy that can lead your team at least to like a semifinal conference appearance? Or is he just a really nice NBA player that's not really going to get you there? We got to figure, if you're Detroit, you got to figure that out at some point here, along with some of the ancillary pieces like Jaden Ivey, Jalen Duren. I think Jalen Duren is a a solid NBA center, but he can't be your second best player. He's got to be your fourth or fifth best player in his prime for you to really compete, in my opinion. So Asir Thompson drafted last year. So yeah, I got Detroit, you know, deep in the cellar here.
Yeah, I would go with them in the last spot as well. They have some nice pieces. You brought up Cade. I like him. Mm-hmm. Jaden Ivey, very good athlete.
Yep.
You mentioned Asir Thompson. I like that pick. Tobias Harris, I understand because you're bringing in an adult, so to speak, but obviously his best days are behind him. Hopefully he can maybe show some of the young guys some work ethic and stuff like that.
Yep.
Jalen Duren, like you said, he can't be your second best player, 3-4, somewhere in there. And then I also like Marcus Sasser from Houston.
I think that
was a good pick by them. Isaiah Stewart's not a bad guy off the bench either. They do have some pieces, but I'm like you, I'm a little skeptical there. I would say very confidently, was it Mike and Mike used to do the stone cold pipe lead cinch?
Yeah, stone cold lead pipe locks, I think is what they called it.
Okay. Yeah, put these guys in fifth.
Yeah, okay. Who you got in fourth?
The Bulls,
yep.
You know, and they understand the rebuild. Obviously, you started to see some of that process with trading some guys, DeMar DeRozan being at the top of that.
Yep.
They have some things okay, but I don't think, you know, I believe if a situation where Lonzo Ball is going to have to show that he can stay healthy, because obviously he hasn't.
Yep.
You walk through Zach LaVine. I think they would move him for the right price.
But they can't get a deal for him. He has zero trade value. That's the problem that they have with him right now.
Yeah, because they owe him so much money.
Yep.
Josh Giddey, Kobe White, again, okay players. Ayo Dosunmu, I think, is a nice player as well. Vucevic, sorry, I probably butchered that. Their center, not bad. But they understand they're not going to win the title with this group, so they're going to start to try to trade pieces of it off. I like the Buzelis pick that they got. I think he has a chance, kind of an outside dark horse, if you will, to be the rookie of the year.
Okay.
Because it was a weak draft, it really was. But I think they would trade pretty much anybody. I don't know if there's an untouchable on that roster that they wouldn't trade for future assets.
No, I don't think so either. I think they're very curious as to what Josh Giddey can do. I think player for player, I didn't mind the Giddey for Caruso deal as much as some of the other pundits did. Yeah, I think Caruso is really good. I think it was a good trade for both teams for the players. Mm-hmm. Now Chicago should have gotten one of the 7,000 draft picks that Oklahoma City has. That is inexcusable. They should have got something out of that. But I think they're going to say Josh Giddey, Kobe White, and Patrick Williams. Let's see what you can do. Everybody else, and the Buzelis kid that they drafted high. Everybody else. LaVine, play your way into a situation. So hopefully in February we can get something for you. Same thing with Vucevic. This team's going nowhere right now. They need to offload everything. It's time to start completely over in the Windy City. So third place, Tony.
You're up, buddy.
This is tough. I did put the Cleveland Cavaliers in third place. And the reason why I pick them is simply because of how the pieces fit together at this time. They've got the big four. I think two of those four need to stay, and Donovan Mitchell's probably going to be one of them. And I would imagine that Evan Mobley would be the other. And I think that, and I love, I think Darius Garland is great. I think Jared Allen is a very, very, very good starting NBA center. But I just don't see how the pieces are ultimately going to fit for this team to really take that next step with the way that these pieces are at this time. Now, Kenny Atkinson's a heck of a coach. My guy, Alex Sarama, shout out Alex for the new player development head there in Cleveland. But I think there's going to be a trade before the trade deadline here. I think they're going to experiment for about 40 games, see what we got, see how these pieces fit together. And then we're going to, I think either Garland or Allen are going to be moved at that time. That's my bold prediction here, because I don't think they can wait around too much longer with Donovan Mitchell, because yeah, he did sign that contract, but I think it's only 3 years, and they don't want to get caught in a Zach LaVine situation where they can't get for him what they would really like.
I agree with a lot of what you're saying. I think Darius Garland is the odd man out. I don't know where he ends up, but I think he will be moved. Going back through and looking at it with Cleveland, I don't have them in third. And I think the one I'm going to put in third, you probably don't think that's what I'm going to do, but the team I'm putting in third is the Milwaukee Bucks.
And I thought about that as well. I did.
When I take a look at the Bucks, here's what I see. You know, you go through, I think Giannis is a really good player, one of the best players in the world. I think Dame has seen better days.
Yep.
Chris Middleton has seen better days. Brooke Lopez has seen better days. And there's a lot of aging pieces around what we have there. Giannis does not have the supporting cast that he needs. I think Dame may be better this year than what he was last year, because been there for a year, understand the system a little bit more. But I'm just not a big Doc Rivers guy. Okay. As far as like him being effective and improving things. So I'm going with the Bucks in third.
And I can see that without a shadow of the doubt. I think regardless, I think this is the last run of the Bucks as constructed. And I think that, you know, Dame did not have a Dame Lillard type of season last year, without a doubt. Now they were saying he was hurt. He was going through a divorce. Obviously Dame's a really loyal guy, staying in Portland as long as he did. So I'm sure that plays into his personal life as well. So they're saying, you know, Giannis is still one of the five best players in the world. And Giannis is the reason why, I had Milwaukee winning the division, but I put the thing I put next to Milwaukee is old. And they are old. And, you know, Middleton, you know, like you said, Tony, his best days may very well be behind him. Brooke Lopez, his best days may be behind him. They just lack a lot of athleticism is kind of one of the big things. I was listening to a podcast, and Giannis led the league in dunks last year, but the guy with the second most dunks on the Bucks only had like 23 dunks, and that was Brooke Lopez, which is unheard of at the NBA level. So I had them first, but I think 1, 2, and 3 here could be up in the air all over the place. Who'd you have for second, Tony?
That's where I put the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Okay. All right. So then we have the one team that we haven't talked about, and that is the Indiana Pacers. And Tony, you have them winning the division, I assume, if my math is correct. I had them in second place. Talk to me.
You had a full season of Pascal Siakam.
Yep.
So I really think that's going to project more wins. You have Benedict Mathurin, and I'm probably butchering the last name, but you have him back.
Yep.
He hardly played at all last year. Mm-hmm. And so I just think those two pieces alone, those are two of your top six players. I think those two pieces alone are really good. And then I think you have two guys are really starting to come in their own. I love Andrew Nembhard. Just the way that he plays, I'm just a big, big fan. He took off at the end of the year. And then Aaron Nesmith, you know, you have like these guys that are glue guys that are starting to roll. And he is a lockdown defender. Like with the Celtics, he had to go against Jaylen Brown and then Tatum. And I just think he is also coming into his own as well. I like Miles Turner's the stretch five.
Yep.
TJ McConnell, coming off the bench, is one of the best backup point guards in the league. And Obi Toppin, I really thought, you know, not that he was bad in New York, but I think that he's finding another level here in Indiana.
Yeah.
And I'm a big Rick Carlisle guy. I think Rick Carlisle is one of the top five coaches in the NBA, and I don't think he gets enough credit.
Yeah. I was this close to picking Indiana for the division, but two things popped into my head. The one thing I wrote down next to Indiana was Halliburton's health. And last year, he really struggled with the hamstring or lower body injury, whatever it was. It cropped back up in the playoffs. Then after however much time off, it cropped back up in the Olympics. Is this just going to be a nagging thing? And there, you know, if he's healthy, then yeah, that's the avenue to them winning the division. A little bit small with Andrew Nebhard and him in the same backcourt, and TJ McConnell coming off the bench. But I like their roster flexibility. I think they are a candidate for a team that might do a 2-for-1 or 3-for-1 type of trade. And if they see an avenue where they could go for it, I could see them absolutely doing that. I agree with you with Rick Carlisle. This is a guy who used to call every single set, and now he's like, just go. And they're averaging 120 some points a game. You know, so you talk about a guy who just really adapts to the personnel that he's given. Boy, he's at the top of the list there. So I think at the very least, Tony, I think we can agree, man, this is a car crash at the top of this division in these top three spots. And you could make a case that all three of these teams could win the division.
Yes, I would agree. I could see any of those top three winning it. You know, and to be honest with you, I probably like Indiana and their style of play the best. And because of that, it probably may be a little bit more biased towards them and wanting them to win over those other two rosters. Cleveland maybe doesn't have the perfect fit with each spot. And then Milwaukee, in my opinion, is a little long in the tooth, but they might turn back and time a little bit. But the last time I checked, Father Time is undefeated.
Yeah. The other thing I was thinking of when it came to Indiana was, will they have a little bit of that Atlanta Hawks from a few years ago? Remember when they made it to the conference finals, but everything kind of fell kind of right for them. Were they really that good, or did just everything fall right? And it turned out that, well, everything kind of fell right. And I don't mean to, I think Indiana's better than that Atlanta team, more ready. I think Halliburton's way better than Trae Young as an example. But you know, that was another thing I kind of thought of as well. So, episode number 101 in the books, Tony, anything you want folks to go home with here? This afternoon, winning mindset. I thought we had a great conversation on that. And a lot of people talk about having a winning mindset. They want to have a winning mindset, but boy, the trick is going out and doing it all the time. Not some of the time, not most of the time, not almost all the time, all the time.
Yeah, and it's like anything that you're talking about there, Marty. If you're going to excel at it, it has to be an all-the-time thing. It can't be, hey, maybe every Monday we'll talk about the mental game.
Yeah.
But the mental game is one of the most underrated aspects of it. You know, I could really see as we take a look at it, you know, you talked earlier about the GM position. Mm-hmm. I could see like a coach that does like the mental side of it. I could see that becoming a position on college staffs as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is so very key, especially with the stakes that are out there for a lot of people and everything. So coach the mental game, coaches. You know, you got to think about it. You've got to be the example. You've got to show how it's done before you tell anybody how it's done. And that's going to take time. But take some of the things that we talked about here today and hopefully implement them. So episode 101 in the books. I want to thank Ruiz Auto and Exhaust, All American Cars and Trucks. Juan Carlos, he's the man. And Tony, did you see the picture of Juan Carlos and Esmeralda with a copy of the book on Twitter last week?
I did.
Yeah.
I did. Yeah. I saw that. That was a good picture.
That was good. So great people there. So go check them out if you're in need of any car services, auto body services, whatever it may be. Great people to work with at both locations, at both businesses. So buy a book. You know, it's closing quick. By the time people hear this, we're going to be about 10 days out from the book going live around the world here. So check out Kings of the Court, all the other things, all the usual stuff. Hope you folks have gotten a lot out of it. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day